Good morning. We have three cases to hear this morning. The panel will need to be reassembled after this first oral argument, so we'll take a short break to do that, and then be back. It won't be a long break. We're familiar with your cases. We've read your briefs, the authority cited in your briefs. We've looked at least portions of the record. So you don't have a lot of time this morning, you should feel free in the limited time that you have to get straight to the heart of your argument, make the most important points that you think you need to make this morning. You're not going to be waiving anything if you fail to address something that's covered in the briefs. We're probably going to have some questions, but be mindful of our traffic light system. When the red light shines, it's time to stop. If you're answering a question from the court, of course, you can finish your answer and you don't lose any rebuttal time if that's what applies to you. But do be mindful of our time. Our first case this morning is Adams versus the School Board of St. Johns County. Mr. Slanker.
Thank you, and may it please the court. Jeff Slanker for the appellant, St. Johns County School Board. With me is my law partner, Terry Harmon, and the superintendent of the school board, Tim Forson. The Supreme Court has held that the differences between the sexes are real, that they are enduring.
Can I ask a housekeeping question to start off?
Of course.
So there was an injunction in place here, but as I understand it, the student who's the plaintiff here has graduated. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so that by the terms of the injunction is no longer in effect. Is that right?
By the terms of the injunction, correct, because it only related to the student.
Yes, and so all we're dealing here with is retrospective relief, a claim for damages. There was an award of damages, right?
There was, Your Honor.
Right, and there can be a corresponding award of attorney's fees for a prevailing party, right?
Correct, Your Honor. That's my understanding.
Okay, but there's no injunction in place.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
The school board's policy here, of course, it takes sex into account. It requires biological boys to use the boys' room and biological girls to use the girls' room. But the district court erred here in finding that policy amounted to invidious sex discrimination, violation of the Constitution and Title IX. That holding, which essentially
segregating the bathrooms on the basis of sex. It is a sex-based classification, right?
Sure. Right. Sure, it is. And it's one that Title IX specifically permits schools to do, to make that decision. Title IX and its
interpretation. So the question is that classification, can that classification survive for the constitutional claim? Can it survive intermediate scrutiny, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And we submit that the classification here absolutely can, because what it does is it draws lines based on the biological differences between the sexes.
Let me make sure I understand the policy, though. The way the school district decides whether someone is a biological boy or a biological girl is based on forms that are filled out at the time of the student's enrollment in the school district. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And so there's a box to be checked on the forms, either M or F. Is
sure.
that right? But in this case, Adams came in at fourth grade, I think, but let's suppose that there was a transgender boy, we'll call him Sam, who transfers into the school district, moves from another state in ninth grade with a box checked as M. The school district would accept that he is a boy for purposes of restroom usage. Is that right?
That's correct, Your
Honor. Even though he's transgender and presumably has the same biology as female students.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that would be true if Mr. Adams had arrived at your school in the ninth grade, for example.
If Mr. Adams had arrived at our school in the ninth grade and he enrolled with enrollment paperwork that indicated that he was a male,
we wouldn't be here. There'd be no problem. He'd be using the restroom he wanted to use.
Well, right? This is a scenario that obviously wasn't before the district court. It's a situation
where... No, but it's important to get this right. I have a question about it, though. I thought there was also... I had the same understanding that Judges Pryor and Martin did about the birth certificate, but I thought that there was also a state mandated physical examination for enrolling students. Is that not true, and that they would also be evaluated as part of the policy?
Your Honor, I'm not certain on that point. I'm not certain if that was part of the record or not. And I apologize. That's something that we could file with a...
At trial, Frank Upchurch testified, I thought, in addition to the birth certificates, that the school board also uses the state-mandated physical examination. You don't recall that?
No, Your Honor, I don't recall that. And that's something that I could submit in a letter. That's just something that I don't specifically recall from the record, but... Okay. Irrespective of that, Your Honor, I think that what the ultimate question is does the policy here, which obviously makes a definition, defines boys in a certain way and defines girls in a certain way, whether that policy advances an important governmental interest.
Interest, you say, is privacy.
Correct, Your Honor. Primarily the bodily privacy of here students and tens of thousands of students in schools throughout the St. John's County.
I mean, what's your best example from this record of how someone's privacy was violated to cause you to make this classification, cause your client to make this classification?
Well, Your Honor, what we have here is a school board that is acting proactively. It's working tasked with an in loco parentis role over 40,000 students to kind of look proactively, think proactively, and the bodily privacy interest is merely being in the same bathroom with someone of the opposite biological sex. Courts have held that there is a bodily privacy interest from...
you're talking in abstracts. I was hoping for an example from the record where a student complained about his or her privacy being violated as a result of Mr. Adams using the restroom he wanted to use.
Your Honor, there isn't a specific instance there in the record, and we certainly will admit that. I'm not aware of an actual specific concrete instance where a student complained of a privacy violation by Mr. Adams' use of the bathroom, but we would submit under the intermediate scrutiny standard that we don't have to have that concrete interest. The interest here, the bodily privacy interest, just can't be hypothetical, can't be ex post facto, can't be generated after litigation has commenced. I think that's kind of putting us into strict scrutiny realm. Obviously, it's got to be more than rational basis, which kind of says you come before.
But isn't your concern hypothetical if you don't have any concrete instances that cause you to have this privacy concern?
Your Honor, I would say that it's not hypothetical in that it's been acknowledged time and time again that the differences between the sexes are real and that it necessitates these types of privacy protections. There was the Faulkner v. Jones case out of the Fourth Circuit that said, of course, it's recognized that bodily privacy and intimate bodily functions in bathrooms is implicated and necessitates sex-separated bathrooms. And the appellee is not arguing here necessarily that there has to be he's not arguing for the abolition of sex-separated bathrooms, just that he
school system still has sex-segregated bathrooms.
Correct, Your Honor.
And has segregated the bathrooms on the basis of sex. Has it done so because it had complaints from girls or boys about, was there ever a time when when it wasn't segregated and there were complaints that led to the segregation, or is that always the policy?
Your Honor, that's always been the policy of the school board. It's been the policy since, and we had a number of very longstanding folks, the school board attorney, the deputy superintendent of student services that had been students in St. John's County, had testified this had always been the way it's been done. It's really just, it's part of the construction code for state of Florida schools, and it's really just how it's been set up. And Your Honors, we would submit that this is the type of case.
Let me go back to my example.
Sure.
In the case of the transgender student who transfers in, that transgender male would actually be required to use the boys' restroom, right, or the gender neutral.
The transgender student that
who came in indicating he was a male in his enrollment paperwork would be required to use the boys' restroom.
The way that we measure it, the way that we enforce the policy, I should say, is through the enrollment paperwork. But it doesn't change the
right,
actual
but
core
my,
of the
my
policy.
My point is, I'm just wondering how the policy substantially furthers a school district's interest in keeping the biological sexes, as you would call them, separate for privacy reasons.
Sure. Here's how it does so. The school board is not going to play, and what the school board attorney said in the lower court, it's not going to play bathroom cop. If there's some reason to believe that an individual is using the bathroom that doesn't match their biological sex, that would be a situation that the school board would have to address, and it would address it on a case-by-case basis, and that's simply not something that came up. It's not something... specifically speaking within the realm of the court's order, I understand Your Honor's question on it, but it's something that would be addressed on a case-by-case basis. The policy remains the same. The policy
to follow up on Judge Jill Pryor's question, so I think what she's getting at, and certainly she can speak for herself, is that, there's a bit of arbitrariness, I mean, because... depending on when somebody arrives at your school, they're treated differently, based on how far into the transition process they are. So, you may have transgender students using the bathroom consistent with their gender identity that you don't even know about, right?
Yeah, that's fair, Your Honor. It is a fair...
That's why it was important to me that we nail down this issue about Mr. Upchurch's testimony. Who is Mr. Upchurch?
What's that, Your Honor?
Frank Upchurch? Who
sure.
Is that? Who is that?
He's the school board lawyer for the St. John's County School Board. And Your Honor... what
testify at trial?
He did. Mm-hmm. He did. And Judge Martin, what I would submit to you on your concern is I would say that the policy was implemented by administrators of the St. John's County School Board to try to address a privacy interest that was real, that had been researched and evaluated by our task force that really studied these issues for a number of years. It's not necessarily going to be perfect and perfectly isolate every particular instance, but by and large, it serves the purpose of bodily privacy. It's substantially related to that bodily privacy interest, which we would submit extends to the entirety of the bathroom, and really drawing it along these biological lines that the Supreme Court has recognized as perfectly reasonable and not invidious sex discrimination was not discriminatory. I see my time is up. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Slanker, you've saved 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Ms. Borelli.
May it please the court, Tara Borelli with Lambda Legal on behalf of the appellee, Drew Adams. We're joined in court today by Drew and his mother, Erica Adams Casper. This case is about the right of transgender students to equal dignity, an equal educational opportunity free from sex discrimination. The school board's burden before this court is a heavy one in light of the extensive factual findings entered by Judge Corrigan after the trial in this matter. At the heart of this case is Drew, who testified at trial that he knows with every fiber of his being that he is a boy. The state of Florida agrees, having legally deemed him male on his birth certificate and his driver's license.
Could you clarify the issue that I raised about Mr. Upchurch's testimony?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the court is asking about the testimony from Mr. Upchurch, one of the 30B6 witnesses from the school board, having to do with the state health form. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So I'm referring right now to page 13 of the findings of fact. And what Judge Corrigan described based on the testimony, and there is a copy of the form that has been entered under seal, is that the state health form simply has a space to indicate the student's sex. So one
is
would
that
write,
a physical examination before the form is the for the filling out of the form?
There was no indication that there's any examination of a student's anatomy as part of filling out that form. And a key part of the medical testimony admitted in this case is that the consensus is that a transgender boy is a boy. Medical providers and experts recognize.
Who fills out the form?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
Okay.
But it simply is a space, and there are medical providers every single...
Is it a medical provider who fills it out?
Your Honor, I don't know if the provider fills it out or if a family does after after there's an examination.
Is there a signature by anyone?
I don't remember that detail.
Okay.
But I think a key part of the testimony here that is unrebutted is that there is a medical consensus that recognizes that transgender boys are boys and transgender girls are girls. That was part of the court's factual findings. The school board has not challenged any of the factual findings in this case, let alone attempted to show clear error.
Here's my concern. I have one about the constitutional claim and one about the Title IX claim, okay? So it seems to me that with the constitutional claim, I view this as a sex-based classification that triggers intermediate scrutiny. You agree with that, right?
Yes, all parties agree with that.
Right. And it seems to me, though, that every reason that Judge Corrigan said the board's policy did not advance an important governmental interest would apply to any form of sex segregation of bathrooms. So if we were to affirm the district court and a woman were to sue the board for access to the men's room, would there be a way to distinguish this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
What would that be?
Everyone who might try to state a claim along the lines of what the court just described would have to show harm as part of their prima facie case. And there is something profoundly different, really a world apart from this case, about a girl who might seek access to a boy's restroom, because nothing about that scenario erases a core part of her personhood or her identity.
Okay. Well, she says, I'm tired of the fact that every day when I go to the restroom, there's a line at the girls' room, and there's never one at the boys' room. And I'm missing class. It causes me a lot of anxiety. I've had grades marked down as a result of this, I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. I want access to the men's room.
I don't know if a court would find that that's a harm of constitutional magnitude, Your Honor.
It's a harm, isn't it? I mean, there'd be standing. That's an actual injury, right?
Well, in terms of distinguishing this case, Your Honor,
yeah?
I do think that there is a profoundly different quantum of harm when a school board says...
Is that what it's based on, though, is the quantum of harm? Where in the case law would that matter? I mean, we used to have segregated water fountains, and it was profoundly offensive, right? Now, the water that came out of the fountains in both fountains was the same. But the fact that it was segregated was offensive. What if the student said, I find it offensive?
Well, that speaks to the harm, Your Honor, that's inflicted on transgender students. I'm not persuaded a court would find that the same harm is inflicted on the girl in the
Why
scenario.
Not?
Well, because, so what the medical consensus says is that we're talking about a population of students with a diagnosis of gender dysphoria. It causes profound, sometimes debilitating distress for that child not to be able to align every aspect of their life in accordance with their gender identity. And we know that one's gender is core to a person's identity and personhood. there is nothing about the scenario that the court posed that speaks to that kind of harm, and that is a basis to distinguish this case. And there is no dispute or debate here that this kind of very profound harm that's recognized by the medical profession as interfering with medical treatment and a medical standard of care, there's no debate that that's what the school board is doing to the transgender students in its care right now. All that has been offered to this court and all that exists on the face of the trial record is pure speculation and conjecture. I'm not persuaded.
So Judge Corrigan said that when he goes into the restroom, Adams enters the stall, closes the door, relieves himself, comes out, washes his hands, and leaves, and says there's no evidence that a girl's more likely to be curious about another student anatomy than any boy. Those rationales apply to any form of sex segregation of bathrooms, don't they?
It is the law, totally separate and apart from this case. So this case has no effect on the basic sex jurisprudence that says that any sex-based classification must be subjected to intermediate scrutiny.
Right.
And we know that
and these
from
are the reasons he said the policy failed.
That's correct. There is no connection between privacy and safety.
That's true, then, for any woman who wants access to the men's room, isn't it?
I don't think that answers the point about the prima facie case that must be stated regarding harm. And that is really what separates this case from the question of abolition of sex-segregated restrooms. And to be clear, Judge Corrigan said no one is advocating that here. This case is only about a boy who wants to use the boys' restroom only. And that's all that this case decides.
I know he said that, but what concerns me is what we say about that will be precedential. What Judge Corrigan says that about that in this case is not. It affects this plaintiff and this school board. School board's appealed. Now we have the prospect of a precedential decision. And so I have to be concerned about how this affects the next case.
Maybe what Judge Pryor is asking you is there a way to affirm Judge Corrigan's ruling in a narrow way that doesn't raise these other concerns, these broader concerns?
That's precisely what I'm asking.
I mean, and I would think you would have some thoughts about that.
Yes. I think perhaps another way to view it is that all this case is about is that every student should have the right to use the restroom matching their consistently asserted gender identity, including transgender students. That is the right that cisgender students have right now, and the question is whether there's an adequate justification to deny that right to transgender students.
Let me ask this question about Title IX.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's the same kind of question. If this policy violates Title IX, why would the same policy about the showers and locker room not also violate Title IX?
We do believe it violates Title IX to deny transgender students access to sex-separated spaces matching their gender identity.
Now there's no intermediate scrutiny balancing of policy interest or anything like that with respect to Title IX. And without regard to transgender status, would that not mean that any sex segregation of those facilities violates Title IX? It seems to me it's hard to square with the text of the regulation and the statute. If this policy violates the regulation under Title IX, then I don't see how you distinguish the toilets from the other facilities.
Well, transgender students should have the right to access any sex-separated facility in accordance with their gender identity, just like every other student. But a basic principle that would apply to both equal protection and the Title IX claim here is that no one challenges the line being drawn between sex-separated facilities, boys' rooms, girls' rooms, locker rooms, shower rooms. Of course, this case only deals with restrooms. But, Your Honor, that regulation I think answers the question under Title IX, because it does allow for sex-separated spaces. The line that we're challenging here is not the one that separates boys and girls under either claim. That's not the line being challenged. The line being challenged is the one that the school board has drawn around every transgender student and only transgender students and has said, not you, you shall not pass. We will padlock the restroom doors to you. You're not fit to share that space with your peers, and your mere presence in that space is unacceptable.
I actually have a different question about Title IX. Of course, we've got this Harris funeral home case pending in the Supreme Court. I mean, what would your advice be about how to handle that? Or would you think that we should wait to rule on that issue, or what are your thoughts?
We would urge the court to rule now at the point that the court is ready to, because we're not persuaded that anything about Harris will add much to the analysis here, because here...
Even on the Title IX claim.
Correct. Well, Jackson versus Birmingham tells us that Title IX is a vastly different statute and is much broader in many ways. But this case is about a classification that everybody agrees exists on the face of the policy. So analysis from the Supreme Court about how to ferret out discriminatory intent by a decision maker, we don't think that will add much to the analysis here. And this case really turns on whether the pure speculation and conjecture that's been offered by the school board is adequate to justify this kind of profoundly damaging discrimination against transgender students. I might also go back to, I think, the opening question during my colleague's argument relating to the injunction. I'd offer the following. We believe the injunction is still in effect.
How? How can it be if the student is no longer enrolled?
There is a statement, the sort of earlier sentence in the judgment, that says broadly that the school board is enjoined from enforcing that policy against Drew Adams. He is somebody who routinely speaks to school clubs about his experience, about being a successful person who is also transgender, and he intends to return to the school to speak to the GSA there. That broad sentence in the injunction would remain in effect and would protect him when he returned to the campus to speak to the school GSA. I also want to just talk about something, a point that my colleague mentioned, which was differences, supposed differences between men and women or boys and girls. The relevant point here is not can one point to any difference between the two comparator groups, because that would defeat every equal protection claim. The point from the sex discrimination jurisprudence is that they have to be relevant for purposes of the classification. And what Judge Corrigan found here is that Drew and transgender kids like him are similarly situated in every relevant way. Their gender identity is no less insistent, consistent, or persistent than any other cisgender student. And similarly, this policy doesn't depend on anything innately different between the bodies of transgender boys and cisgender boys or how they use the restroom.
Why do you think the government has a substantial interest in segregating bathrooms on the basis of sex?
Your Honor, I would refer the court to an amicus brief submitted by Professor Kogan, who actually talks about where we can trace the inception of sex-separated restrooms. And we see the emergence of these separated spaces around some of the social panic when women began entering the public sphere. And there was a sense at that time that women were vulnerable.
But do you think it's a privacy interest? What do you think it is?
I think it's a social convention that we've had since that time. Now, to be clear, no matter what undergirds that social convention, nothing about this case challenges it. This is a boy who wants to use the boys' restroom only.
Well, it depends on how this opinion's written. That's why I'm asking these questions. Mm-hmm. So what would you say we should say about that interest? That it's just social convention?
Privacy interests have to be specifically defined, and that's what the case law tells us. Now, I think that the school board's reply brief really unmasked in a very candid way the privacy interest that they're claiming. The reply brief said it is Drew's mere presence that infringes the privacy right of other students. There is no recognized privacy right in the law to not have to share common spaces with transgender students. And it's profoundly damaging to transgender kids to be separated that way. But nobody's privacy is impacted when transgender students use restrooms in the same ordinary way for the same ordinary reasons as other students.
Is there, though, that privacy interest to use the bathroom shielded from persons of the opposite sex?
So, well, in terms of this convention of having sex separated restrooms, yeah. Again, I want to be clear, nothing about this case challenges that. In fact, it is core to Drew.
I understand that you want to say that this is that narrow, but it's important how this is written, and I want to know why, how that would be written.
To the extent that there's a concern about a privacy interest in separating the sexes, what I would say is the following. This case is about putting all boys in the boys' restroom and all girls in the girls' restroom.
Is that legitimate?
I would be surprised if someone could challenge that convention by showing harm, assuming the facilities are comparable. You might have a situation where maybe...
Forget whether there's harm or not. I mean, you and I might have a disagreement about the hypothetical I gave about the harm, hypothetical harm of the girl who always sees a line at the restroom, mm-hmm. And is late for class. But is that a legitimate interest to put men on one door and women on the other door? Is that a legitimate governmental interest, in your view?
Nothing about this case calls that question, though, Your Honor, because Drew is a boy.
No,
I
think we have
that
to
he's
say,
a boy.
Why is that?
The reason is that this case seeks only to allow all boys without discrimination, all boys, to use the boys' restroom. Nothing about the Equal Protection Clause or that regulation under Title IX authorizes discrimination against any individual boy or a subset of boys. And that's what the school is doing. But the unrebutted testimony here was that Drew is a boy. There were a host of specific factual findings all supporting that ultimate conclusion, and they have not challenged that. Indeed, Mr. Upchurch conceded.
All right.
Yes, Your Honor.
You've gone over, you've been answering our questions. Let me just tie it up and make sure I understand your position.
Yes, sir.
And so in another case, in my hypothetical case, you say the only reason that girl loses is because of a harm.
That's the one that springs to mind, Your Honor. But I want to be clear again. Nothing about that question is affected or changed by treating Drew equally, and so it cannot form a basis to heap discrimination on transgender students.
I mean, as I understand it, one of my concerns about the district court's order is it seems to conflate the analysis, which is just a sex-based classification analysis, with a gerrymandering of the policy as if it's targeted at a particular kind of boy or girl. And I don't think that's how intermediate scrutiny works.
Well, we'd examine the classification that's relevant to the group experiencing discrimination. We don't examine it for a group for whom it is irrelevant, which is why the distinction between girls' and boys' restrooms just isn't relevant to the analysis here. No one else is harmed by that. But the students who are harmed are the transgender students, and the school has drawn a very bright line. The best practices policy of the school board says explicitly, transgender students, you get to use a gender-neutral restroom, but you cannot go into, this is the combination of the unwritten policy and the best practices, you alone are the boy that cannot use the boy's restroom. And even Mr. Upchurch, the 30B6 witness, conceded that Drew is a transgender boy. So the school recognizes that. He simply asked to be treated equally.
Thank you, Ms. Borelli.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Slanker, we have a few minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. Wanted to make a few kind of key points, and I know I've got limited time, so I'll try to hit them all as quickly as I can, as cogently as I can.
We let your adversary go over a little bit. I might let you go over a little bit.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think what my friend on the other side said is obviously true. They're not challenging in this case the practice of separating bathrooms based on sex. They're not saying that there shouldn't be two separate bathrooms, essentially. The lower court said there's an important governmental interest in bodily privacy in separating the two bathrooms based on sex. The question here is, what definition of sex advances that important governmental interest? And we submit that our definition is really the only way to do so. Your Honors, I think that the similarly situated analysis, and this is relevant to the equal protection claim, and it's also relevant to the Title IX claim, there still has to be a showing that one sex was treated disadvantageously from a similarly situated member of the opposite sex.
And you say that depends on how you define sex, right?
We do, Your Honor, but we also say...
What about this form, this physical examination form? Do you know anything about that part of the record,
Your Honor,
Mr. Slanker?
Yeah, I just looked at the form with my co-counsel, and
okay,
we don't see anything on there that necessarily indicates that there was an examination affirmed by a medical doctor. There's a signature for a parent.
What is it? Oh, it's a parent.
Yes, Your Honor. There's a signature on there. The form that I looked at was there was a signature from a parent. The policy, though, still is biological sex. It's based on biological sex. And we would submit, Your Honor, that the appropriate comparator here is not a biological male using the men's facilities, because a biological male, and obviously we've argued this in our papers, is never similarly situated to a transgender male, because one identifies with their biological sex and the other does not. And we would submit also, Your Honors, that this would obviously have to implicate, the decision here would have to implicate and strike down the separation of all facilities based on sex throughout schools, locker rooms, showering facilities. If it means sex discrimination in this case, then it's got to mean sex discrimination in the other cases. I don't think that it can be cabined. We don't submit that it can be cabined in that way. And what I'll say, too, is this is from the Nguyen case. What the Supreme Court counseled against in the Nguyen case was to not acknowledge the most basic differences between the sexes reduces the protections of the Equal Protection Clause. It makes them meaningless. And here we have a distinction. Supreme Court has recognized that distinction, and we simply submit that it was not discriminatory. And I'll conclude with that.
Thank you, Mr. Slanker.
Thank you.
We understand your case. We're going to take a brief recess to reconstitute the court.
All rise.
So surprising that there's not as much interest.